Your daily TFMR podcast is brought to you by JMBullion.com, your number one most trusted online bullion dealer. Greetings out there to everybody at TFMR. All right, it's Thursday, May the 20th. This is your time slot for your Thursday conversation. We haven't had one of these for a little while. So it's great to get back on the horse and go today. And man, who could I bring in other than Alistair McLeod at this point? Alistair, obviously an old friend, and he is the director of research at Gold Money and someone I guess I would consider one of the world's foremost experts of the gold trade through London, the shenanigans of it all, and how it all works. He also, though, just in terms of economics, monetary policy, I mean, he is a go-to resource. And so, Alistair, thank you so much for joining me.
It's very much my pleasure, Craig.
And again, as director of research at Gold Money, you want to go to the Gold Money site. You want to check out all that they offer. And one of the things they do offer, though, is great insights. So you find the insights tab. You'll find all of Alistair's work there. In fact, his most two recent articles I'll include in the text of this podcast thread so that they're right there for you. And that's the main thing we want to talk about today. You know, many of you are familiar with these changes that are buried within Basel III that are due to be implemented on June the 28th, where what's called the net stable funding requirement is going to kick in. And if it does dramatically change how the digital derivative and fractional reserve pricing scheme operates. Now, the LBMA, predictably, has been fighting against this now really hard for a couple of years. And actually, in a show of their true colors, the World Gold Council helped the LBMA write their latest appeal to get out from under this and avoid having this applied to them next month. But Alistair has got some thoughts on this. And so that's why I'm having him here. Alistair, I'm just going to kind of leave it there. Can you first explain to us what these new requirements are and how you see them impacting things should they be allowed to be applied at the end of June?
Yes, sure. I mean, what we're talking about, as you say, is the net stable funding ratio. Now, this is made up of two things. On the top line, you've got available stable funding. Now, this is applied to the liabilities side of a bank's balance sheet. And as you go through the various categories of liabilities, from tier one equity to depositors to, bonds issued by the bank, whether it's issued by more than a year or it's less than a year, and derivatives and commodities, they are all ranked in terms of how they can be used for funding the other side of the balance sheet, the bank's assets. When it comes to commodities, including gold and silver, and derivatives, the available stable funding is zero. In other words, you can't use a position on the liability side of the balance sheet, which is a commodity like gold and silver or a derivative. You cannot use that in the funding calculation for the other side of the balance sheet. So if, let us say, you're taking gold on the asset side of your balance sheet, and this is going to be unallocated gold, incidentally, then you can't use gold on the liabilities side of the balance sheet as part of your funding for gold or derivatives on the asset side. I hope this is sort of, coming clear.
Yep.
What it means is that you've got to use other liabilities as your funding for gold positions, silver positions, derivatives, whatever. And there is a ranking that's then put on the required stable funding on the asset side, depending what that asset is. So something like cash, for example, requires zero funding, because that's not a problem. But if you take unallocated gold, then that is seen as something which requires a degree of funding from the liabilities side, the available stable funding, and 85% of the position on the asset side of the your gold position on the asset side of the balance sheet will require that available stable funding. So, you know, it's 85%. So, you know, you can't use gold, you know, which you owe to someone else, to fund something which you call gold, your asset on the other side. Right. So this is actually a huge, great hurdle. It means that as a market, the bullion banks in London, and when we're talking about timing on this, incidentally, you mentioned the end of June. That is for European banks. So we're talking about European and Swiss banks at that date. At the end of this year, or more correctly, from the 1st of January 2022, it's due to be introduced in London as well, which means that all members of the LBMA, all banking members of the LBMA, will be subject to this new regime. So, you know, it's the whole lot at the end of this year. What it means is that you can't really run a position, an unbalanced position, even if you regard this as a derivative, because of the balance sheet penalty in doing so. Now, you can. I mean, one of the things that's interesting in this is that if you regard, as the LBMA does and insists, that unallocated gold actually is gold, then I think they create difficulties for themselves because they can't net off one side against the other that easily. You've got that haircut problem, as it were, of only 85% coming from the other side, you know, whereas zero is the ideal figure. Mm-hmm. And you cannot use, you know, any gold that you owe out to fund your gold asset position. So you can see that this is actually a big spanner in the works for the LBMA, and it is particularly a spanner in the works for the settlement pool, which is the London bullion market clearing company, which is jointly owned by four major banks, they do all the sort of settlement, as it were. It's rather like matching all the other positions, member positions, coming into a central point. So they match all that. But this basically means that they can't do this job. So the whole thing is a real problem. And indeed, you referred to a letter which the LBMA wrote to our regulator in this country, the Prudential Regulatory Association. I mean, what a horrid name. Anyway. Wrote to them, you know, complaining about this, saying it's, you know, this is absolutely impossible. In effect, they're saying we're going to have to close up shop unless you do something about it. Well, you know, will they do something about it? This we don't know. But this has knock-on implications, because if London, if the London Bullion Market Association in effect closes down, I mean, you know, look, banks will still be dealing in bullion, but they'll be dealing on behalf of their customers. They won't be taking positions themselves because of the balance sheet penalty. Therefore, what happens on COMEX? I mean, we've got 43 banking members in the LBMA. And last time, I think last week when I looked at the numbers, the CFTC numbers, there were, I think it was 17 swaps who were long, and there are further 27 who are short. Same number, roughly. So you can see that, you know, you've got the same players in London as you've got on COMEX in the swaps, then the swaps are effectively out of business as well. And it doesn't stop there either, because it's not just gold and silver and the platinum group metals, but it is also all commodity derivatives. And this is, you know, this is the commodity derivative side is quite a bit bigger. Because it involves oil and things like that as well, energy, it's quite a bit bigger than just gold. Now, I looked at the numbers that are involved, because what we're talking about is removing paper supply. So right. When we remove that paper supply, we can expect some of the demand to switch into physical, because people have, let's say, an account at a bank. They have a bullion account at the bank, and it's unallocated. They've been persuaded it's unallocated, basically because it's far cheaper to hold it that way, says the bank. And the bank sort of, you know, laughs in your face a bit, but that's what you do, and you believe it. You believe the bank is okay. So you have an unallocated account. You think you own some gold. You don't.
Right.
all that happens is that you are owed money, not gold. You are owed money, which is based on the price of gold. And that's it. You know, you don't have gold. So your bank gets out of this business. You know, they will pay you off in fiat. You're not going to get any gold. The gold is not there. So the next question really is, how much of this supply is being withdrawn from the end of, effectively, the end of these derivative markets? And looking at the Bank of International Settlements figures, I mean, the last figures we've got are for the end of last year, but it works out that taking that and the net short position on COMEX, we're talking about a figure of equivalent of over 11,000 tons. Now, obviously, not all of that is going to go back into gold. I mean, you know, it's ridiculous. But you can see that this is going to create some significant buying pressure for the gold, the physical gold market. The same, of course, is true for silver. And more embarrassingly, we have a roaring bull market, as you know, I put that in inverted commas, in industrial commodities and raw materials. So, you know, that again, that the hedging, if you like, which has helped suppress the prices, that goes as well. What an embarrassing time for this to happen. I mean, we know why the prices are rising, or at least you and I know. People in the market don't seem to understand. The reason is that the purchasing power of the dollar is going down the toilet. So that is why these prices are rising. So what an awful time to introduce this new net stable funding ratio as the new banking regime. So, but going back to gold, we've also got another problem there. And that is way back in 2002, there was an analyst who I know worked with Sprott for a while called Frank Veneroso. And he made a speech in Lima, which was famous or infamous, depending which side of the fence you're on, where he reckoned that the amount of central bank hedging, you know, sort of leasing rather, selling into the market, supplying the bullion banks, which then went out, sold it into the market. And the way he put it is ended up adorning the women in India and China. Not quite true, but I mean, basically disappeared into the market. He reckoned that the total tonnage was anything between 10,000 and 16,000 tons of gold. Now, at 16,000 tons of gold, that's pretty much half, at that time, half total gold reserves in the global central banking world. It's gone up a bit from then, you know, admittedly. But I mean, we're going back to 2002. And we know also that gold, I mean, since 2002, the demand that has generated, particularly from China, after 2002, it became very visible because people were buying gold. It wasn't just the state doing it secretly. And not only that, but the Chinese government was advertising to people buy gold, which was, you know, is an extraordinary thought in Western terms. India was beginning to buy gold because the Gold Act then sort of, you know, freed up the situation a bit because there's just so much smuggling going on. They had to take the brakes off. And I think that was 1990, the Gold Act came in there. So again, you got, you know, demand was beginning to build up from Asia big time. And of course, we had that big bear market where the price fell 40% between September 2011 and the end of 2015. What happened there? Right. I mean, the answer is there was no supply coming into the market. I mean, I remember talking to a friend who was a director of one of the big Swiss refiners. And he said that, I mean, this was 2014. He said they were working 24 hours a day and 7 days a week refining gold from LBMA 400 ounce bars, 995, and less, because old bars. Involved in this as well, into the new Chinese 4.9 standard. And interestingly, he was taking in LBMA bars from Arab hands and under their instructions, turning that into the new Chinese standard and returning it to where it came from. So what we were seeing was something really quite extraordinary. We were seeing this enormous shift, and we discussed this at the time, I remember.
Yes.
Of gold going effectively from the West into the East. So this situation tells me that we have got an enormous amount of central bank gold that has been leased into the market, which cannot possibly have returned if Frank Veneroso's figures are right. Now, he didn't just sort of pluck these figures out of thin air. He had a number of conversations with a guy called Terry Smeaton, who I actually knew. I used to lunch with Terry from time to time. And in those days, we lunched at the Bankers Club, which was just behind the Bank of England's back entrance. And Terry used to come out and, sort of lunch off-site occasionally. He would do that maybe sort of once or twice a week. And, you know, we would get chatting. I didn't realize how important he was to the whole gold scene at that stage. I wish I had, because by God, I would have tried to get some information out of him. Really nice guy anyway. He was actually responsible for all the foreign exchange operations in the Bank of England.
Oh, my gosh.
So he was an interesting man.
Yeah.
But the other thing was, at that time, I mean, you could just stand in the street outside the Bankers Club and just watch all the security vans going in and out of the back entrance, obviously taking gold out or putting it back in.
Yeah.
So Terry, Frank Veneroso was right about gold actually leaving the bank's vaults and, you know, being sold into the market because it was so visible. I mean, the activity was just quite, quite remarkable. So he was right in that sense. Now, I do think that since then, the objectives of gold leasing have changed quite a bit. What they subsequent to then, I mean, obviously we had a reasonable bull market. We had gold, first of all, going up. I think it breached the $1,000 level in 2008 ahead of the crisis. At that time, I think all this activity, it was all sort of changing because the priorities in the market, as far as the Bank of England was concerned, was managing the market, trying to ensure that no bank got into trouble in the market. And also, I think, as part of a combined operation with the Americans to try and keep the price suppressed. So you would get occasionally, a big sale in the futures market or, when gold was short in the market, more would be leased into the market, but it would remain in the Bank of England's vaults. All that happens is there's a book entry because all the bullion banks in London have an account at the Bank of England. So, if, let us say, JP Morgan wanted some gold, it would be quite easy for JP Morgan to say to the Bank of England, we want some gold and we'll pay you for it, which is fine. But the Bank of England says, that's okay. It stays in the vault. But you will get from us a piece of paper saying that it is not quite your property, but we hold this gold on your behalf in our vault. You know, it's a book entry transfer system, if you like. So it turns into a sort of a hall of mirrors, as it were.
Right.
You know, so you can see what's happened. Now, I don't know. How much gold is actually out on lease?
No one does.
No one does. We cannot know. But the important point is that, we have to ask the question at the ending of these derivative markets, what is going to be the central bank position when it comes to gold that has been leased into the main players in this market? I leave that as an open question.
Well, and what I'm getting from you, Alistair, is a couple different things. One, when they are forced to unwind these positions, probably the first in line to get whatever gold is there, and what it, when you break down those vaults that Ronan Manley has done at Bullion Star, there's maybe 800 tons possibly that isn't Bank of England gold and that isn't ETF. So whatever gold is there, that 800 tons plus, I would say, the ETF gold, first in line is going to be the central bankers to claim it.
Yeah. Well, yes. I mean, I think what you're referring to there is what we might call the float, as it were.
Yeah, right.
And I mean, basically, that float, I shouldn't think, is more than a few hundred tons. 800, I think, is quite optimistic. I think it's probably no more than a few hundred tons. Remember that what we're talking about is not dealing in physical gold.
Right.
Admittedly, these two markets are conflated with each other, but we're dealing with gold which is magicked out of thin air.
Right.
It's the only way to describe it. It is created by the expansion of bank credit. But instead of it, the bank credit being dollars on the balance sheet, the bank credit, ends up in the dollar equivalent of the price of gold.
Right.
It's not gold.
That daily settlement of all that trade, the $1 trillion a day or whatever the heck it is,
yeah,
it's all unallocated make believe gold, right?
It's unallocated. Now, and in there, there is the odd deal,
off of that float, which supports the whole system, which may be forced to kind of unwind and go away if all of this comes to pass over the next 8 months, 7 months. The float is what backs it up. And the float, the first claims on that float, I just can't imagine, aren't going to come from central banks, which basically leaves nothing for anyone else that thinks, right?
Yeah, it leaves a huge great minus figure, actually.
So again, you mentioned earlier, for anyone that has one of these unallocated accounts, I don't care where you are, in Perth or Montreal or anywhere in Europe, because again, as you mentioned, and that's very important to point out, that June 28th is for the continental European banks. So if you've got, in Deutsche Bank or Credit Suisse or, whatever, that you got to get it out of there.
Well, I mean, it'll be got out for you if you don't.
Yeah, but I mean,
and not only that, but not only do you get out of there, but you've got to make up your mind, do you want to earn some gold or not? And
right,
if the answer is you want to earn some gold, then go for the physical urgently.
All right. So, Alistair, in our remaining time, let's talk about how and why. Because let's first start with Basel III, which was, if I remember right, and I'm just working off memory, this was drawn up after the financial crisis, wasn't it?
Correct.
Okay. So let's establish that first, because you had the great financial crisis, which was a existential threat to the current financial system and all the banks.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. The idea basically behind Basel III was to match long-term liabilities with long-term assets, and to match shorter-term ones with shorter-term assets, and to ensure that there wasn't a counterparty risk in the system, which could actually act as a domino effect.
There you go. So that
was the thing. And this was the whole basis behind this net stable funding ratio.
They didn't just decide to do this out of the blue. This was a reaction to the previous crisis where these bankers, the hub of bankers in Basel, said, wait a second. Now, one of the things we're going to have to address is all this gold nonsense that they've been doing since 1975.
Well, it's not just gold. I mean, this is...
Well, that's true.
The scope of this is far wider. And in fact, the original document on this net stable funding thing came out in the beginning of 2014, and it was finalized in October 2014. So this is not a new story.
Okay.
It is something which, it's so far in the future, we can't worry about it. I mean, we don't really understand it. So, we'll look at it later. I think it's been very much in that sort of category. But I do know that there have been quite a number of conversations with the Bank of International Settlements, or more specifically, the Financial the Stability Board, which is the the committee which is ultimately responsible for this. Someone I know who attended one of those meetings told me that, they just laughed in their faces. I sort of think, this is just staggering. Now, I mean, what is the motivation behind this? We can dream up all sorts of lovely conspiracy theories that actually what they want to do is destroy the derivatives market. You could say that they understand that unallocated gold is a derivative market, and mm-hmm. with a massive level of turnover. I mean, daily settlement is in the order of 30 million ounces, but the turnover under that is considerably greater. And not only that, but if you actually look at the true numbers, you know, that 30 million ounces daily settlement average is actually between members of the LBMA.
Yeah.
It doesn't include dealings between members of the LBMA and non-members, in other words, members of the public, and it doesn't include central bank dealings. So you can see that there's, I mean, all you're looking at that 30 million is the tip of a very large iceberg.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this is massive. So, you know, if you're a regulator sitting in Basel and you got, you know, you're tasked not to have another great financial crisis, you look at this and you think, well, this actually, we don't know how it could destabilize the whole world. Well, it could do, but there is a big risk that it will. So therefore, we got to stop it.
Right.
And they're not, I tell you, this has been around for some time, you know, and nobody has come up with any alternative. And with the Eurozone banks being forced by their regulator, the European Banking the EBA, they're forcing their banks into doing this, as we said earlier, in the middle of this year, which is only 6-7 weeks away.
Right.
London is going to follow at the end of this year. You know, there was a consultation period which actually ended at the beginning of this month, which is why the LBMA, in conjunction with the World Gold Council, appealed. I mean, it was like a letter on both knees and the floor, you know, with sort of, you know, begging for some relief from this, because, you know, this clearly is going to shut them down. Now, my own view on why this has come about is I can see the motivation. Mm-hmm. I can understand that, you know, they're pursuing things like digital currencies, which will cut out the whole commercial banking system. I can understand an argument that they want to do away with the commercial banks because that will do away with this ebb and flow of bank credit, which is so destructive of basic economies. I can understand all that, but I actually think it's very, very simple. You have got regulating bureaucrats who know nothing about markets. They do not understand the effects. They do not understand the consequences. And I think they've just gone on regardless. And nobody can really back down now. I mean, you know, you can't back down from this one.
It's going to they're going to look like they just kind of bent over it and just said, okay, whatever. I'm sorry, banks. We're just going to let you have your way at this point. But Alistair, okay, so that's the final point then. I'm talking to Rob Kirby yesterday, and he's like, I just can't imagine this is going to actually happen. I mean, it's akin to a dog eating its own tail. It is, there will be grandfather clauses. There'll be exemptions that'll be made because again, it's so destructive to this established order. The other part of this too is I'm watching on a daily basis, price rises on COMEX. The banks just keep feeding in new contracts, expanding their short position by feeding new contracts and specs and increasing their liability. So I guess at the end of the day, is this going to happen? Because it seems like, I just can't imagine. Maybe it's that phased rollout thing you mentioned, that it's going to impact the EU banks first. And they're going to say, oh, boy, look how bad this is. We better stop here and give London an exemption before the first of the year. How do you see? I mean, do you think this is actually going to happen?
I mean, I've looked at this and I think the answer is yes, it is going to happen. I mean, I take the point, you know, that we're sort of looking at this and thinking with horror, you know, God, this is just a major thing. I mean, the ending of these markets. I mean, does anyone know what this really means? You know, it's so incredible. We just can't believe it. You know, as Rob was saying, you know, there are bound to be get out clauses and so on. But I can't really see where these get out clauses are. I can see a get out clause so that, you know, perhaps a fully matched position on one side of the balance sheet can be offset against another one. And on that basis, we do away with this net stable funding ratio. But that can only really happen, so far as I can see, in accordance with the Basel III regulations, if they're treated as derivatives. But then the excess on one side or the other then suffers this net stable funding ratio problem. and you know, funding has to be allocated specifically to ensure that, you know, that it's all kosher. So, but the problem is that the LBMA either doesn't understand or doesn't accept that this unallocated gold just doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, they almost sort of hoist. I mean, the moment they turn around and say, you know, look, chaps, this gold doesn't actually exist. You know, we've been pretending all along. I mean, you know, watch out. They've got themselves into this problem, and I don't think they can get themselves out.
You make me think about all the times I've said, you know, this idea of the dollar is the reserve currency. You and I can talk about it because we understand what's behind it, but a lot of people can't even grasp it because no one was alive when the dollar wasn't the reserve currency, right? I mean, it's all they've ever known. I mean, how old is Ruth Crowell or Crowell, however old, you know, she probably wasn't paying attention in 1975.
I can tell you, she wasn't alive in 1975.
Okay. So all that they've ever known is this system.
Yep.
And so they can't even imagine that anybody would ever be a threat to it, or that anybody would call it to account or audit it or anything like that.
Actually, you make a very good point, Craig, because, you know, when you look at regulators in places like the Bank of International Settlements, they're all neo-Keynesians. They don't actually understand money. I mean, they live in a world which is entirely fiat. And I suspect that part of the motivation behind this is to try and remove gold from the monetary system completely. So, yeah. You know, yeah. If you want a conspiracy theory, I think that's probably the most likely true conspiracy.
Alistair, let me lay this one on you. I was thinking this about 5 minutes ago while you're speaking. Not that I wasn't listening, but this thought came to mind. I thought, you know, there's a group of people out there that think that the central banks, to get out from under debt to GDP ratios, to get out from under the entire massive wall of debt, is they need a revaluation of gold. They need to reprice their gold that they have in their balance sheets at a higher level, not $42 or whatever they're carrying it now.
If I saw the Fed change the value on its balance sheet of, you know, from $42.22 an ounce to something closer to the market level, I think I would go with you on that one. But sign of that at all.
Alistair, here's the thing. What if this forces a rediscovery based on physical, and the central banks can just put up their arms and say, well, we didn't have anything to do with that. All these banks were doing this, and they were the ones that caused the price to be down. So now we're going to recognize the new price, which is whatever it is. It's not $1,800. And then they, like you said earlier, cut out the commercial banks, rolled out some digital currency based off of their new strong balance sheet. I don't know, just a thought.
Well, you have to have another thought. And that is, if they revalue their gold and they're missing anything between 10 and 15,000 tons of it because it's out in the market and someone else
good
got
point.
It.
You know? They have to actually have it in the first place.
So, you know, this is not a simple story. And, you know, the other thing I introduced into my article was, of course, don't forget that Germany tried very hard to get her gold back. Mm-hmm. I think it was back in 2014. And she ended up getting 300 tons 3 years ahead of schedule. But, I mean, they were talking about just drip feeding this stuff out.
Right.
As if it just didn't exist. And this was followed by Netherlands, and Austria decided to remove some of her gold from the Bank of England. So, you know, this is the motivation for that, I think, could very well have been suspicion that actually, as a central bank, it's far better we have control over our own gold, just in case.
Alistair, didn't you say this came out of Basel III in 2014?
Yes.
Didn't the Germans ask for their gold in 2014?
It was about the same time.
Yeah.
I don't think we can join the dots on that one, though.
You never know.
Tempting. I hadn't thought of it, but I don't think we can join the dots quite that way.
Just thought I would. Maybe I've got my hat on, my foil hat on too tight, Alistair. All right, my friend. One last thing. What are we going to look for next? Are we just going to wait with bated breath every day, checking the headlines to see if the LBMA gets a reprieve? And then it comes June 28th. Just kind of watch to see what the fallout is.
Well, there's certainly not going to be a reprieve from the European Banking Association. I can be pretty certain of that they've already cast, you know, it's too soon. Looking at this whole thing, I think the immediate question is one that you touched on, and that is that, you know, short positions on COMEX are increasing. I mean, the swaps, who are the bullion bank trading desks, must be absolute desperate to try and sit on the price of gold and silver, for that matter. You know, they want to contain this position. They can't seem to get it back. I mean, normally what they would do is they would bang the market, you know, take out, all the stops, put the word around that, this is in a bear market, it's now trading under the 200-day average and all the rest of it. Well, they've done all that, and it hasn't actually worked. So where they go from here, I mean, goodness alone knows. I just don't know. They are running scared. They really are. And, I wouldn't like to be in their shoes at all.
No, As you speak, I was looking at my latest numbers. I keep track of the bank participation report, you know, that once a month.
Yeah.
Just kind of combined aggregate bank position. Back in the first, from 2 weeks ago, it was still 108,000 net short of the 28 banks or whatever it turns out to be. Well, what is that? That's 11 million ounces?
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
What's that? Yep. 300 tons, 320 tons, something like that?
Yep. Yes, it's about that. Yep.
That they got a cover?
Yeah. Where? It's not in London, I can tell you.
Yeah. Boy, oh boy. All right, Alistair, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to get back with you. Let's just kind of set a date, maybe in July.
Yeah.
And let's just see how this has gone. Let's try to talk maybe right around the, you know, first or second week of July, and we'll see where we stand, okay?
That sounds like a very good idea, Craig, and it's going to be interesting.
In the meantime, thanks for all you do.
The Europeans will have given up by then. And the other thing is that we don't have to wait until the end of this year as far as members of the LBMA are concerned. If this goes ahead, and I'm finding it increasingly difficult to see how it cannot go ahead, if I can put it that way, then the banks will be shutting up shop well ahead of that deadline.
Have to.
The 1st of January 2022, yeah.
Have to. They got to find some gold, or they got to settle all that stuff out in cash, you know, just take a hit. They got to cover some shorts.
Yep.
I like all of that.
But the financial system, I tell you, is so ropey. If you get a major bear market developing in equities, it'll take the currencies down with it. I mean, I've argued this so many times with, on other shows.
Agreed.
Just swat up on John Law, Mississippi Bubble, how he used the unbacked French livre to puff up the market. When the market collapsed, the livre collapsed with it. That is a lesson for today. Yep. And it could happen overnight. I mean, let's say not overnight, but it could happen remarkably quickly.
Yep. I hear you. All right, my friend, thank you so much for your time. I really, really appreciate it. And we're going to talk again in about 6-8 weeks, okay?
Yeah, lovely to talk to you again, Craig.
Always good. All right, thank you, everybody, for listening. Hopefully we'll have another Thursday conversation for you next week.